Welcome to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. My co-host, Dr. Les Olala, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College, is away from the studio today, but with me is a guest host, Dr. Tony Fox. Tony, you have been a faculty member and an administrator at Northern for how many years?
5 years altogether.
And what exactly did you do here?
I was the Vice President of Academic Affairs, following you as you moved up to Executive Vice President. I administrated the faculty and oversaw the ministerial training and then taught several Bible classes as well.
Now, before you came to Northland, you were on the mission field.
That's correct.
You were in Eastern Europe.
We were 9 years based in Warsaw, Poland. Came there in 1992, shortly after communism fell. Helped a national pastor start a Bible college. We had young men from all over Eastern Europe. In fact, only 10% of our students were ever Polish. 90% were Russian. From Belarus, Ukraine, Russia, as far as Siberia, different other countries. We would train them for 4 years, then they'd go back into their countries, and they would evangelize, start churches, and many of them started Bible institutes themselves in their own countries.
Now, your wife, Pam, and you've been married for how long?
We have been married for 23 years.
And you have how many children? Now, you better know this one.
We have three boys.
Yeah. Three boys.
Yeah, one of them, our oldest, Caleb, is a freshman here, missionary aviation major at Northland.
Now, what got you interested, or what was your burden for Eastern Europe for those 9 years?
Well, interestingly enough, Sam, it was back when I was a child. I grew up in a family where my dad was not saved until later in life. In fact, you remember that moment.
I remember that moment, yeah.
My mom was the one that raised us spiritually, and she had devotions with us just about every night. And one of the things she would do during those devotion times is read us stories of believers in communist lands, especially Russia and China. So really, you know, this was back in the 60s and early 70s when there was no kind of thought that that part of the world would ever open up. And she didn't know, and I didn't know, that the Lord was using that to prepare me for the ministries that I'd be having once the wall fell.
So you kind of went in as one of the first missionaries after communism fell.
Yeah, as far as Poland, we were the first resident fundamental missionaries to enter in there since before World War II.
The wall fell in 89.
89,
and you
late
went
89.
In, you went in 90...
92, yeah.
92.
Now,
92. What did you learn from that experience?
Well, a lot of things. One is we saw the strategic value of training nationals. I mean, these men, all of a sudden this part of the world was opened up. No one had any missions experience or even much linguistic experience with Russian and Polish and these Slavic languages. It opened up and there were these already existing churches. And they were not crying out really for us to send American church planters because they knew that the best church planters were the young men right there in their own churches.
Mm-hmm.
What they were asking for was ministerial training because that's what they had been deprived of from communism.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in there and tried to provide that for them. And then these young men already knew their languages, already knew their cultures. We just gave them the same kind of training we received. And then they went back and just did really incredible things. And some of that you've seen yourself.
Yes, in Omsk. Now, let me just, before we jump into the topic I want to talk to you about today, it seems to me that you're saying that even under communism, during the domination of an atheistic society and an attack on the gospel and a limitation of its spread, there were still a lot of Christians.
Yes, just like in the first century with the Roman Empire trying to stamp it out, and the more they tried, the more they fanned the flames of the gospel. That's what happened in Eastern Europe, and that's what we're seeing to an even greater extent now in China.
So the real need in Eastern Europe was not so much to go over and win people to Christ, although that's a need anywhere. It was to go over and train these believers and prepare them so that they could then become strong and self-propagating.
Right, and evangelism was part of the training.
Sure.
And, of course, we were involved in starting a local church and evangelizing ourselves, but the primary need was that you just expressed.
So a closed country is not necessarily an unreached country.
Right, as far as unreached by the gospel.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a whole host of people that you found there, and then you came in your primary ministry.
Right, I mean, the gospel was in there, of course, before communism.
Sure.
And
sure.
So there were already churches there. Communism, like I said, tried to stamp it out, but instead they grew. What communism did do is it deprived them of ministerial training.
Right. Yeah. Now, the reason this is important to me and of interest to me is because within the last couple of years, the Lord has reignited the missionary burden for you. And in fact, you and your family are on deputation right now, and you're going from church to church, raising support for almost the same kind of ministry, although fleshed out a little differently, in China, another communist country mm-hmm. that seems to be opening up.
Right. And actually, the flame was never unignited, even as we were wrapping up our ministry in Eastern Europe and handing it over to nationals. China was on my mind, even when I came here to Northland and talked with you and, mm-hmm. and some of the other administrators mm-hmm. about how I'd like to see a lot of our fundamental churches and schools coming together and working for China like we did not do in Eastern Europe, and have a more coordinated approach to China and a quicker connection with the underground churches than we had in Eastern Europe even before communism falls.
So I'm listening to this broadcast, and you know, I go to the local church in the area, or I'm a believer, I care about the gospel. Give me a snapshot of China.
Okay. In 1949, when Mao Zedong first entered China, or when he first took control, rather, there were somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million Christians. Christianity in China then was very weak. There were a lot of what they called rice Christians, those that were just making professions because they were getting rice from the Western missionaries.
I got you.
Western missionaries, unfortunately, at that time, they were not really training Chinese Christian leadership. Christianity never became really Sinicized or Chinese. You know, there were great exceptions before that with men like Hudson Taylor and Jonathan Guilford.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about what impact those men had.
Yeah, well, their impact was huge. And what they did was just the opposite of what these later missionaries did. I mean, they even lived like the Chinese, reached them. There was training of strong Chinese leadership. But for some reason, that kind of died out in the first half of the 20th century. And so the Christian church in China was very weak just before communism entered. The Western missionaries had built Western-style church buildings. Everything was very Westernized. Mm. Mao Zedong comes in 1949. By 1952, he chases out or kills all of the Western missionaries.
Wow.
Destroys the Western church buildings that forced the Chinese church underground, meshed naturally with the Chinese emphasis on the family, and then you had a Chinese church, and that's what took off. So right now, the statistic that we're getting from leaders of entire networks of these underground churches in China is that there's somewhere now between 90 million and 100 million believers in China.
Wow.
One of the reasons they give us that number is they say because the Chinese Communist government now officially admits to 50 million. And they say typically that government admits to only half of what they really think there is.
Now, the entire population of China is roughly
1.3 billion.
So almost a tenth of the nation, population.
Yeah, something like 8%. Yeah.
That's huge.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And this is without Western help. I mean, it's something that we're looking at now and saying this had to be God.
Well, because, you know, and the reason that's interesting to me is because that's typically not how you think of China. You think of China as this pagan, heathen, and it is in some ways,
right,
but with no really gospel witness, except for maybe one or two really old Christians that were from
Hudson Taylor's. Well, that's the propaganda that the Chinese Communist government was giving during all those decades. I mean, I remember my mother having some literature, and it said that there is no known Christian in China. Well, while we were wondering if there were any Christians in China, what was really happening is that the gospel was catching on fire there and spread, and there were house churches born all over the place.
Now, I know you have to be very careful in talking about this for a lot of reasons, and we certainly don't want to put in any way a hindrance to what God is calling you to do with these Chinese brethren. But can you tell us a little bit about the health of the church
sure.
in China?
Yeah. The underground church in China is different than it was in Eastern Europe because Eastern Europe had the centuries-old heritage of Christianity. And so they understood basic, essential, fundamental doctrines.
Like the deity of Christ.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Whereas in China, they don't have that heritage. And so it's more like we read about in the book of Acts right away in the early church with this phenomenal growth, but all kinds of false teaching and heresies attacking the churches from all over. And so right now the Chinese church, I mean, you have attacks from the outside with the government, but then you have homegrown cults that are coming in, and they're just obviously diabolical. I mean, one called Eastern Lightning that's gotten huge believes that some Chinese woman in her 30s is Jesus Christ returned. And they actually make it their purpose to infiltrate real churches and try to get them to believe this and disturb them. And it's a lot of different arrows that Satan is throwing at them right now.
Now, when you describe the underground church in China, how do they meet? What does being a Christian in China look like in terms of worship?
There is an official government church that was started by Mao Zedong, really kind of as a puppet church to say that they had religious freedom. That's called the Three Self Patriotic Movement. In those churches... Three Self Patriotic Movement. They even borrowed this Three Self idea from missionary language about being self-autonomous, self-propagating, so forth. But in their constitution, it reads that the head of the church is the Communist Party. The Communist Party selects the pastor. Most of them are women because the women tend to comply more. They screen their sermons, so forth. They have a couple of seminaries. They are totally liberal in theology. They do not believe the Word of God, or they do not believe the Bible is the inspired Word of God, and so forth. So it's really a puppet church. So that exists. The churches that we're talking about are churches that refuse to register with the government, so they are illegal. They have to meet in their own homes, in apartments, houses, so forth. Typically, they're anywhere from 20 people to 200. I've been in some of them where they cram in like sardines. They bring their own little folding seats, and they're just crammed in shoulder to shoulder. You wouldn't believe how many people they can even get in such a space. But, you know, they're that eager, and they're all over China now.
Now, a question I think a lot of us would have is the status of the Bible in China. Are there Bibles in Chinese? Do they have access to the Bible?
That's a good question. There's not as much of a need to smuggle Bibles in as there used to be. When we talk with some of the current Christians, they talk about how their grandparents and parents, how having scriptures was like having gold for them. It was that precious. Mm-hmm. Now, though, some of these networks actually have underground printing presses. And so they're actually able to print and disseminate Bibles themselves.
So the Bible would be something that most Christians would have access to.
Yeah, now most of them have them.
Do most of the churches that we're talking about have pastors?
Yes, but they look at them a little differently than we do. It's just kind of the way that they have evolved up to this point. And there is a lot about the teaching of scriptures on church polity that they haven't absorbed yet. I mean, it is a very young Christianity. Typically, interestingly enough, the underground churches will not call their leaders pastors because that's what the three self churches call their leaders, and they don't want to be associated with
them. I got you.
So they call them typically co-workers.
Well, and we'll pick this up in our next broadcast, and I know that our listeners will want to join us. And if you are wanting to get a downcast of this broadcast, www.thewordforlife.org is a place where you can find that download, and we hope that it'll be a blessing to you. Until then, may the Lord be with you.